Thanks for downloading this IMSA Radio podcast. It's for personal use only and must not be broadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy by visiting IMSAradio.com or search for IMSA Radio wherever they get their podcasts. Live from Trackside, this is IMSA Radio.
Hello everybody and welcome along to a very busy Saturday here on IMSA Radio with some practice, some qualifying and some racing. Quite a bit of racing actually, most of it in sound and vision for you as we bring IMSA Radio and IMSA TV together. It is one of the true sports car classics here in North America, the Sale & 6 Hours of the Glen at Watkins Glen International here in upstate New York in the Finger Lakes region. We're going to start our Saturday with some IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship coverage. It's free practice 2 coming up next, and it's all live and free here on IMSA Radio. 3, 2, 1.
The WeatherTech Sports Car Championship on IMSA Radio.
Welcome along to the Hagerty Global Broadcast Centre. John Hindorf and Jeremy Shaw with you again this Saturday. Shea Adam is our VP Racing Fuel Pit and Paddock reporter. Let's check in with her straight away. Not too many problems yesterday, Shea, but there were a couple at a couple of teams who were chasing some issues, notably the Turner Motorsport BMW.
Correct, and that ultimately resulted in another gearbox change for the blue and yellow BMW that's going to be gracing our field today because they got it done. The car is sitting on the pit lane. It is ready to go out and turn some laps, which is excellent news for the Turner Motorsports crew. Last time out, they lent a motor hoist to another team in the paddock. This time, they're the ones who needed the little bit of additional help. Also finding some trouble yesterday involved the number 91 Riley Motorsports LMP3 machine. It was Dylan Murray getting into the tires at the exit of turn 9. It was just some bodywork damage to the right rear of that car, and the left rear too, I should say, actually. It looked like a shark had taken a slight bite out of it. They got that replaced. That car also ready to go out. Gearbox issues also for the number 9 Pfaff Motorsport Porsche. We thought maybe Keith O'Leary was getting a bit hangry, and that's why he pulled off the track. But no, it was a box full of neutrals, so they managed to get that car repaired as well. The other damaged cars that we saw yesterday, there were two of them with actual visible damage. The 18 Arrow Motorsports LMP3 machine, Kyle Tilley and Simon Pagenaud playing tag. You're it going into turn 1. Slight tail damage to the rear of the Arrow Motorsports LMP2, but they managed to get that car fixed and back out for the remainder of the session. Same story as far as the car being repaired for the 79 Proton/WeatherTech Racing Porsche. It was a right rear damper failure on that car when Matt Campbell was on his 7th lap of the day. The good news was they got it fixed. They got it back out in that car, turning nearly 20 laps in FP1. But all of those cars looking for more and more laps in today's running. But the first car on pit exit, because this is a special session. For the first 30 minutes, if you're an LMP2, LMP3, or GTD, you may only be a silver or bronze driver. Well, they've got two of them in that car. The 84 D3 Racing LMP3 machine, that's Dawson Racing. They only got two of their drivers in the car yesterday. They are ready to go this morning. First car waiting at the pit exit. First car that'll be going through the Michelin tire readers, and they need this track time more than anyone else.
Shea Adam will keep us up to date with VP Racing Fuel Pit and Paddock reports. Pit stop practice going on for Corvette at the final pit stall on the way down the hill, and it is down the hill to pit out. Hello to Jeremy Shaw, who joins us. The lights go on the prototypes as they begin to roll out of the pit lane. Bit of extra track time yesterday as IMSA sort of bought themselves an insurance policy yesterday, Jeremy. In case the weather closed in today for this session.
Yeah, good morning, everybody, or wherever you happen to be in the rest of the world. Yeah, odd decision that. Not quite sure why they wouldn't have done that right from the beginning to add that extra part of the session. I mean, if it's wet, it's wet. It's very, very strange that that should be added so late yesterday for the bronze-only session, particularly when yesterday's session, the first session for the WeatherTech Sports Car Series was on track. It was the last activity on the day, so they could have extended that year beforehand. So, like I say, odd decision to make it so late, but I think a very good decision because, of course, there's very little track time going into qualifying, and then there's just a very brief warm up tomorrow morning before a 6-hour race. So, when you've got three drivers in the car, like most of the teams do, or many of the teams do here this weekend, track time is critical. You want to make sure all three drivers are comfortable before you get into the serious stuff of practice, of qualifying and then a race.
Yeah, absolutely right. Still, bit of extra track time. Nobody's going to turn it down. So, Shea, go through who's doing what to whom again, because this starts out as a 75-minute session, but ostensibly that's in three parts, isn't it?
Yes. So to put it most simply, right now for this 15-minute portion, if you are on track, you have to be a silver driver under the age of 30 if you're in the prototype, but ignore that. Silver driver or bronze driver only. In 15 minutes time, well, now in what, 12 minutes time, then you may go out if you are in the pro classes, so DPI or GTLM.
Oh, hang on a second, Shea. We've had a big coming together on the outlap at the heel of the boot. It, once again, is the Wynn Motorsport number 11, which was taken out by Stephen Thomas. And the other car involved there is the Pfaff Porsche, the number 9 car, which was coming in to turn in. Oh, huge loss. Lock up at the rear end by Thomas in the Wynn Autosport car, and the Motul Pfaff Plaid Porsche are absolutely an innocent party. They'll be both needing some attention, I'm afraid. And that was who was it in the 9 car that took that car out?
Robichon.
Was it Robichon? Thank you, Shea. That hadn't even come up on my timing screen. So a big lock-up and loss on cold Michelin tyres by the Wynn Autosport number 11. Then up onto the kerb on the right-hand side, then cannoning in to the Pfaff Porsche. That's not smart. And it's going to take up a lot of time, Jeremy Shaw, in the opening parts of this second free practice session.
Yeah, just a bit of lack of experience there from Stephen Thomas. Cold everything on that car. Cold brakes, cold tyres.
Cold
brain. Not up to speed. It was just pushing cold brain as well. Yeah, too early in the morning. Just pushing too hard too soon. And credit there to Robichon. He saw what was happening in his mirrors and he kind of steered or stayed to the left as much as he possibly could, having seen that car coming towards him on the barrier. So that it was really just a glancing blow to the right-hand side of the Pfaff Porsche, whereas if he turned in as he already had done and continued that turn into the corner, it would have been a much, much, much harder impact with the right-hand side of the car. So hopefully the number 9 Porsche won't be too badly damaged. A view on board
I think
Aston Martin here, and you could quite clearly see the number 9 Porsche beginning to kind of make an evasive move to its left to avoid the contact. It wasn't able to completely avoid the contact, but I think he got away with it pretty lightly there.
Yeah, it was far bigger damage to the front, right across the front of the prototype. There's a wing mirror, a bit of door skin damage, and a right front fender wheel arch on the Pfaff Porsche. Now, they will be able to be replaced, but the nose cone, the front body section, and the right rear of the Wynn Autosport number 11 is in strife on that Orica LMP2-07. Also a bit of damage on the guardrail on the right-hand side. I hadn't realised that Stephen Thomas had gone quite that far across, and that has brought out a red flag with the clock still counting. There's bits of carbon fibre impaled on the fixings of the light blue Armcor, three-lane Armcor barriers, the steel-shaped barriers on the driver's right there. Bit of clean-up for the hard-working marshals to do. Hello to all of our corner workers and officials. A bit of the cheese wedge from behind the right rear wheel as well on the Orica, which is on the circuit whilst things are quiet. Opportunity for us to say hello to everybody at the track. Not sure we're on the PA actually at the track. I can hear something else in the background. Yeah, indeed, we aren't on the PA at the track. I can hear someone else's voice in the background. Not sure why that is. If you're listening to us on IMSA Radio at the circuit, apologies that the switch has not yet been flicked. Maybe they've just taken the opportunity to break away from us while the red flag is out. Rear clip on the Orica being replaced. These are all sort of clip on, clip off, Jeremy. So, all right, it looks bad, but so long as there's no major suspension damage or damage at the front end of that car, relatively speaking, that's an easy fix on that prototype. It's a bespoke racing car. Bits are meant to come off and be replaced.
Indeed, yeah. Aesthetically not very pleasing, either the aftermath or the incident itself. But, yeah, hopefully there shouldn't be anything too major. But, yeah, the biggest concern, I think, will have been that impact with the barrier, because it did, you know, the car just turned sharp right when he kind of hit the brakes and then tried to correct the car, wasn't able to do so and lost control. It sort of spun down the barrier on the inside. It was just sort of a looping spin around, wasn't it? But it'll be fairly expensive, and it'll be a mistake he won't want to make too often. The good news, of course, is Stephen Thomas is a team principal there at Wynn Autosport, so he's going to have to cough up a bit more for that. But Bobby Golosinski's crew there will have that car back together again, and assuming that impact with the right hand side with the barrier wasn't too hard, it should, as you say, John, be just some bolt-on pieces. It'd be very embarrassing for Stephen, though. I mean, he works super hard at this craft. He was only introduced to racing less than a couple of years ago, and has just embraced it wholeheartedly. Absolutely loves it. He's super serious about it. Takes everything, you know, to the nth degree to make sure he's the best he can be. To make sure the crew and you know involved in the setup of this team with Bobby Golosinski, who's been around this sport a long, long time, to make Wynn Autosport the best it could be. He's hired a very talented young driver in Tristan Nunez to be his regular season co-driver, so he'll be disappointed with himself to have made that mistake so early in this session.
Sure, this is not good news for the silver and bronze drivers.
No, as I started to say before that incident occurred, and thank you very much for pointing it out, the silver and bronze drivers are on track by themselves from 8 until 8:15 this morning. Well, we are currently at 8:09 and at least the 1 minute sign being given. So a full list of cars waiting at the pit exit. They went straight to the pit out so they would get an opportunity under a minute till we go back to green. They're going to get 5 minutes of track time by themselves. Then at 8:15, the pro cars are released. So if you are in GTLM or DPI, you can go out on the track. Doesn't matter your driver rating. At 8:30, all the competitors from GTD, LMP3, and LMP2 are allowed to drive. They're allowed on track until 9. And then the final 15 minutes, just to keep things fair and even, are for the pro cars only. So that's where we should see the mock quali runs for the pro categories.
Yeah, absolutely right. Looks like we're going to go back to green flag racing very shortly. Hagerty Global Broadcast Centre, free practice 2. 65 minutes to go, just waiting for cars to go back out on the circuit if you're at the track and listening to us on RS2. Sorry, we don't control what the track are feeding, either the track or IMSA deciding to put something else on the PA at the moment. That's not our call, but nudge people and tell them they can tune in via IMSA radio on RS2, of course. So we're back underway. Reset, take two, as they say. Or ding, ding, seconds out round two. I'm not sure which one it probably is. We've had a short delay. The number 11 Wynn Autosport car being a tad optimistic. Although I have to say that right from the very first time that I saw that and subsequently, Jeremy, looks like the back end locked up on that car. So whether that was brake bias not being right, an extra downshift from Stephen Thomas or whatever, but the back end of that car breaking away as or even before the brake lights came on. So that might have been an extra downshift there that set that whole incident in motion at turn eight.
Yeah, true. But whatever it was, it was driver induced basically. So yeah, it doesn't lessen the feelings that Stephen Thomas will be having right now of, I think, probably embarrassment for that one. But look, he'll put that behind him and carry on. You know, things happen. Everybody makes mistakes. Everybody makes mistakes at one point in time. Unfortunately, his one was rather public because the cameras were all on him. It was right at the beginning of the session. But he'll put that behind him. But the bad news, of course, is for the rest of the silver and bronze drivers, yeah, they're really going to have now not even one full clear lap before all the other cars are allowed out on the track as well. So it kind of negates the effect of this 15 minutes they're supposed to have had on their own to get a bit of track time without having to worry about all the traffic, the additional traffic elements.
It's Jeremy Shaw, who's with me, John Hindhoff in the Haggerty Global Broadcast Centre. And what is it? Just after 8 o'clock here at the circuit. So that's just after 1 o'clock in the UK. Coming up to a quarter past, actually. That number 11, by the way, Shea reminds me, was the quickest of the LMP2s yesterday. It's not going very quickly at the moment. They are looking at the back of that car, particularly the right rear, where it impacted the bright blue Armcore. Oh, actually, I take that back. The right rear didn't. It bounced over the car, the curb rather. So that was the impact to the Porsche where the damage came on that right rear, Jeremy. And they do seem to be having a good look at the suspension there. The rest of the bodywork, including the nose cone, has already been replaced.
Yeah, that's right, John. It was the nose of the car that impacted the barrier, and then as it spun back across the curb and onto the racetrack, it was the right rear corner that impacted the right side of the Fast Porsche. So yeah, damage on both ends. That nothing really escaped the incident's attention, so to speak. There's quite a bit of work to do on that car, and yeah, even though Zachary Robichaud did an excellent job to try and minimise the contact as much as he possibly could at the wheel of number 9 Porsche, just to try and get out of the way, he wasn't able to completely avoid it. So I'm not sure whether the Porsche is back out onto the racetrack again. I don't think it is actually at the moment, but there'd certainly be much more concern about the damage to the number 11 car.
So down to the hour, which means it's an all-skirt now, Shea, doesn't it?
Correct. The pro cars are allowed out as of 30 seconds time. They'll be allowed out. But the Turner Motorsport BMW just caught my eye. It's Aiden Reed currently driving that car, the young Australian, a rookie to the 6 hours of the Glen this weekend, but driving around with his emergency flashers on when he sees a car coming up in his rearview mirror, that car with a brand new gearbox, remember? So he's breaking it in nice and easy, and he's let it.
Oh, Just lost here for a moment. We'll get her back in a second or two. But that was the car that had the driveline issues yesterday. And following on from similar problems, Jeremy, that they had at the last race at Belle Isle.
Yeah, similar components on the car, certainly in the drivetrain that was expired. But a different problem yesterday. Will Turner told me last night it looked like the gearbox oil pump failed, which is an odd thing to happen because this BMW M6 GT3 has been pretty proven now. It's been around for a couple of years or more, and I don't remember. I guess they might have had some difficulties before, but I don't recall any major problems. And yet to have two transmission failures in a row, it got sort of super hot at Detroit, which is what put the car out there. So I think it was a sort of more of a cooling problem in Detroit. Yesterday, the oil pump failed for the gearbox, but still, like I say, strange that they should have two in succession problems, similar problems with that car, but at the same time different. So they'll be certainly concerned about that, but as they will be hoping to get that problem out of the way before the race come around, and to use this term that Larry Holt from Multimatic threw at me yesterday, pre-disasterized. He called the problem on the Mazda prototype car yesterday, which was a problem lack of boost on that car. He said, when something goes wrong in practice, it statistically reduces the chance of a disaster in the race. So we are pre-disasterized. I thought that was absolutely brilliant. It's a thing, he says, it's pre-disasterized. So hopefully neither the Mazda or the BMW will have any more problems this weekend. That's the plan anyhow.
Pre-disasterized. I'm writing that down. That's a Holtism then. Yep. That we are adding to our dictionary. He and Nick Dearman would get on very well. We have the Motorsport Nictionary, where Dearman just adds words to common usage. It was Martin Haven, who said if you tweet it, then people will believe it. If you see it twice on a broadcast, that's it forever. It's true forever.
It's fact.
Yeah, that's it. Absolutely right. Let's have a look at some of the times. Tower Motorsport, and the number 8 car, John Ferrano, quickest, 1:39.8. Times will get quicker, of course, through this session. Oliver Askew's been bolted into the Andretti Autosport Ligier that he shares with Marco and Jared Andretti. And he's just leaving the pit now. Great opportunity again for some more sports car experience, although I fear with how he's been doing in his substitution roles in IndyCar that he might get snapped up for a single seater role, for which he is clearly also very well qualified. Up at the second, Ben Keating in the number 52 PR1 Mathieson Motorsport. And now the big hitters are out as well. Alexander Rossi, another man with plenty of single seater racing behind him, has gone to the top in the number 10 Cunningham and Alta Acura RX DPI, with Ollie Platt dropping in behind. So now, Jeremy, we're going to see everybody having to deal with traffic on the near 3.5 mile 11 corner circuit here at Watkins Glen.
Yeah, indeed so, John. Yes, and really at this stage in the game, there's really only two, maybe three drivers who turn representative lap times. Even now, as we're almost 20 minutes into this, what should have been 20 minutes into the track time for this session. As you say, Oliver Askew, quickest in the LMP3 category, 1:41.9, it's only about a second away from his best time yesterday. In GTD, Carl Kirkwood, however, he's really got on the game. Another former Team USA scholarship winner, of course, and a front runner these days in Indy Lights, kind of following his good friend Oliver Askew up the racing ladder. Those who have been karting together since they were kids, they're both from Jupiter, Florida. And Carl Kirkwood's done a 1:45.1 in the number 14 Lexus RCF GT3 car. And that is an incredibly good time. It was significantly faster than the best time turn yesterday in GTD, which was by his teammate Jack Hawksworth, 146.1 1.6, a full second and a half faster than yesterday for Carl Kirkwood in that number 14 Lexus. They've had all sorts of bad luck this season, that team, continuing from where they ended off last year as well. Just everything that can go wrong has gone wrong. Hopefully they've got that stuff out of the way now and they can have a clean run in the race on Sunday.
Share update on the tower number 11 that caused that red flag for us in this VP Racing Fuel paddock report.
They were looking at the right rear. You were spot on with that, John, but they determined that it was bodywork damage only to that car, nothing more integral in the suspension. So the car is back out around the circuit. It is still the bronze and silver session only for the next, 10 minutes of this session. Still Stephen Thomas behind the wheel of that car, but it is back out and circulating, set personal best times in sectors 1 and 2. So let's see how far up the charts that one can go. And thank you, by the way, to Tristan Nunez, answering his phone when called upon. I appreciate that.
Excellent. Good. Very good. Obviously, didn't think it was Dish Network trying to sell him something at all. Faf Motorsport back out again after replacing the right front fender around the wheel arch. Let's have a look at some of the other times coming in.
Well, I suppose, John.
Well, yes, possibly the door skin as well. Mirror, certainly.
Or the mirror.
It's probably easier to change the door because they just pop up off the the hinges. Almost the identical accident a moment or two ago by the other blue prototype, the number 18, Aero Motorsport. That's the Dwight Merriman, Kyle Tilley and Ryan DL car going up the inside of one of the Lamborghinis there. Got it all locked up and probably hasn't done the Michelin tyres any good. So has peeled immediately into the pit lane. Dwight Merriman listed at the wheel of that car. And that car then back into the pit lane. But this time no contact on that particular part of the circuit. I'll finish the thought on the Faf Motorsport Porsche. That car back out and circulating. Seemingly none the worse for that little attack. And it was Zachary Robichon, I think, behind the wheel of that when I saw the car leave. Say again?
It was Misha Goikberg in the Lamborghini. I think it was Robichon, but it could have been Lars Kern because they have very similar helmets now.
Right, okay. Lars Kern has just broken another lap record at the Nürburgring for Porsche. Oh, sorry, not lap record. I've broken another production car record for Porsche with the latest model of their high-performance 911. Saw that come in the other day. Bit of a Nürburgring specialist. And very quietly spoken, Lars Kern. Doesn't said to me before, I don't consider myself as a racing driver. I just get to race once in a while. I'm a development driver. Tell you what, for somebody who's not a racing driver, he's a pretty good racing driver. Let me put it that way. And the work that he's done in developing Porsches down through the years has been outstanding as well. Through the GT Le Mans field at the moment. And of course, we have got the full five car entries with the two BMW Team RLL M8 GTEs only doing the longer races, the Michelin Endurance Cup this year. And it is one of those two cars, the 25, that's quickest at the moment. Bit of a disappointment for BMW Motorsport. Their competition debut with the new GT3 car, the new M3 GT3 car, should have been, actually right now, it should have been in competition right now on the Nürburgring in VLN4. But an accident in practice yesterday meant the car was too badly damaged to take part today. They did try and repair it overnight, but they didn't have a spare chassis there, so they've had to withdraw it. So that will happen at a later date. That's the car that will replace the M6 GT3, both for their semi-works and customer teams. Not homologated, not quite finished being specced up, that car yet it would have been running in SPX today at the Nürburgring. I was watching that a bit earlier on this morning for once, lovely weather in the Eifel Mountains. But that, as I say, been delayed. No replacement date for that, but we'll keep you up to date with that. That's a significant car for BMW and for their customers, and I've no doubt we'll see it over here in the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship as we're looking towards, of course, GTD Pro. That would be the BMW GTD Pro contender for next year. At IMSA Radio, if you'd like to get in touch with us on Twitter, please. That comes straight through to us here in the Haggerty Global Broadcast Centre. Just on 50 minutes to go. And other than that red flag, Jeremy, thankfully, other than that, incident free. And time starting to come down with Kevin Magnussen now at the top in DPI.
Yeah, fastest time just turned by K-Mag then in the car that won the most recent race in Detroit a couple of weeks ago. 132.654. So still a second and a half away from the best time that was turned yesterday. That was by Olivier Pla in the Meyer-Shank Racing with Kerbager Jane in Acura car number 60. And still some considerable distance away from the lap records here. The 129.6 is the lap record here, and somewhat surprisingly, it was almost identical time set in qualifying 2 years ago by Oliver Jarvis, 129.639, to the race lap record set by Pla, 129.657, so just 17 thousandths of a second differential between the fastest race and qualifying laps, which is, as I say, fairly unusual for most racetracks. Just another quick note about that near incident that took place with Misha Goitberg out on the track. Misha driving the number 19 Grasser Racing Lamborghini. They had an excellent podium finish last time out at Detroit, and third, became second after the quote-unquote DQ, or put to the back at least, of the number 39 Audi. We talked about that yesterday, problems with the refueling system on that car. And Misha, surprisingly, is one of only seven drivers in this field who have a previous overall victory in the Saarland 6 Hours of the Glen. Surprising that there's so few in this field that have won the race overall in the past. Shay was talking about yesterday how many drivers in the field, and 40% of the drivers had not previously raced at Saarland 6 Hours of the Glen. Most of them, quite a few of them, are raced in other series here, but only seven drivers won the race overall in the past. So, kind of curious that, particularly with the lengthy history of the Watkins Glen, of the Saarland 6 Hours of the Glen.
Yeah, it's a fair point. Possibly says a lot about the changing of the guard, Jeremy, in this form of sports car racing, and how the younger generation are looking to this. We talked about this, weren't we? And you and Brian Till were talking about it in the Lamborghini Super Trofeo, how the younger generation of drivers now are not necessarily always laser-focused on open-wheel driving here in the States. That's always been an option to go and do something, particularly stock cars. But in Europe and further afield, I think there's a realisation that the amount of investment in time and money to get to the top, whether that's IndyCar or Formula One, it's an awful high mountain to climb, and there are only ever going to be a certain amount of seats. Even if you only had the same amount of cars in a sports car race, you'd normally have two or three times the seats because you've got co-drivers. And with the manufacturer interest coming in, there are career opportunities for young drivers now, and they've decided to specialise perhaps a bit earlier than we would have seen in the past.
That's right. I mean, the vast majority of what we now consider to be top-level sports car drivers, they began their career in open wheel and then made the switch for one reason or another. But you're absolutely right. There's a lot more drivers nowadays who are looking to get into sports cars much earlier in their careers and regarding that as a very sensible career option. And as you say, it's exactly because there are so many more manufacturers now actually involved in the top levels of sports car racing, both here and abroad as well, in all sorts of different championships too. So it does give the opportunity for them to become professional drivers rather earlier than they would otherwise be so. And you know, the drivers we talked about a few moments ago, Carl Kirkwood and Oliver Askew, are perfect examples of that. Carl Kirkwood's got an opportunity now with the Vassar Sullivan team with Lexus. Oliver Askew, well, perhaps not quite so much. It's not a factory team that he is involved in, but you know, getting a chance to drive in Prototype 2 or Prototype 3 cars is you know, a really good step for the future for both of those two very talented young drivers.
Share Adam with VP Racing Fuel Pit and Paddock update.
Everybody is allowed out on track now as 30 minutes and 19 seconds have elapsed of this session. And just for those of you keeping track at home, watching timing and scoring, I know it's been annoying some drivers such as Spencer Pomfelli. There have been 11 track limits violations so far in this session, and the drive-throughs have started to be handed out. So pay attention to where the edge of the track is at turn 1, turn 8, and turn 10, because race control certainly is.
Good. And we saw some penalties yesterday, didn't we, Shay, on that?
Yep. Yeah, there were only 20 penalties in FP1 for track limits, but there were 72 total for the 3 sessions of Michelin Pilot Challenge. So race control is warmed up. They're ready to go. They've got the cameras permanently fixed on those 3 corners to keep track. And they are calling these penalties. They're now drive-throughs for the practice session as the 38 LMP3 machine is off. That's Matteo Llerena facing the wrong direction on the circuit as well. Is that the exit of the toe of the boot? Might be. Now he's blocking the circuit briefly. But yes, race control is giving out penalties today, drive-throughs and practice. We've yet to see what they're going to do in the race, but they have also been disallowing times and giving warnings for your first discretion. I'm not sure what they're going to do in the race, but they are definitely not taking this lightly.
Just on this session, we did have the extension yesterday, but this session is running as advertised, so we've got 43 minutes back. Jeremy, it's a specific setup for what is going to happen for track limits, so there can be no argument from drivers. There is a procedure.
Yeah, they get a warning first, and then they get they get a warning. I think plus the lap time is annulled instantly, and then if you transgress any further transgression will result in drive through penalties. So yeah, that, as Shea was saying, there's been a lot this weekend. I hate the whole track limits thing. Because it's just not pure, but then again it's also not pure when you're not using a racing surface. So I like it. I like the fact that they're calling it right away from the very, very beginning of practice. It was made very, very clear in all the driver briefings, which are done virtually these days, and it's received by all of the drivers, so they know what to expect. As we see a spin there, that was close. That was another 38 car. Was that Matteo Llerena again? Yeah, I think so. Yep. In the performance tech car, the youngster who's racing all sorts of things everywhere and not doing anything. Anyway, I won't go to there. But he's been driving a Lamborghini in Europe as well, and back with the performance tech motorsports team this weekend. But aesthetically, I like the fact that the track limits are being imposed, even though I don't like the concept of it. And it's certainly excellent that the race control is on this right from the very, very beginning. No excuses now. This is what we're going to do. Live with it.
And I think you have to do that, Jeremy, because what you can't do, and by the way, I'm not saying that IMSA have done this in the past, quite the reverse. IMSA, WEC, Eduardo Freitas in the WEC is a past master at it. He sets out his stall very, very early, and various other race directors around the world do the same. And it's certainly the same here in IMSA. You've got to basically slap the puppy on the nose and tell it what it can't do, because racing drivers will push the limits. That's their job. They push the limits of themselves and the cars. And if they can straighten a bit of the track out, if they can take an extra 2 miles an hour through a corner, if they can shortcut a bit of the track, and if they don't get told they can't, they will keep doing it until they are told they can't. And the issue with some other series, and again, I make the point I'm not talking about IMSA here, the issue is if you let that go through practice and possibly even qualifying, and the first time you penalise somebody is in the race, you get people reasonably, team managers and drivers, Jeremy, saying, hang on a minute, we've been doing that all meeting. And then you decide to penalise us two laps from the end of the race that we were winning. That's what causes the consternation, I think. So I'm with you. You've got to do it. You've got to stamp it out. You can't have people making up their own track configurations. You can't have them shortcutting the track. You can't have them cheating by not staying within the white lines. But you've got to get on it early. I think that's it's the only thing to do. Race drivers are fairly simple creatures, aren't they?
Yeah, precisely, John. Precisely. Race drivers, by definition, they're pushing everything
totally
to the limit. That's what they do, as you rightly say. And I often go back to when this issue comes up. There's another spinner there. Another of the.
It's the 11 again. It's with the black.
11 car, yeah.
Yeah, with the black just cover on.
And how many laps have you done, Stephen Thomas? He's done a dozen laps. So okay, so he's been out for a few laps since that incident early on.
Turn one, by the way.
I go back to when at Circuit of the Americas, when IMSA and WEC were there for the same weekend, and WEC decided that they were going to
enforce track limit at 19, particularly.
Yeah, exactly. And IMSA decided they weren't. IMSA decided they weren't going to do it because they felt they couldn't do
police
it consistently and properly, and you know, really make sure everybody was complying. Everybody was complying, i.e. the consistency that
correct
you were exactly talking about there. So they decided not to do it, and criticised for that very soundly. But it was patently apparent as the weekend progressed there that WEC, as good a job as they did, were not able to police it 100%.
Correct.
So there were inconsistencies. So from that point of view, it was the right call, I think, by IMSA on that occasion to say, OK, look, we can't do it properly, so we're not going to do it at all. And they looked a lot better at the end of the day than WEC did. But, you know, but this weekend it's different. And subsequently it's been different in WEC as well. Nowadays, they have the systems in place where they can enforce it practically and consistently, and that's what they do, and that's what they're doing again this weekend. And hats off to the officials for making that happen.
All concerned, yes, and the technology that moves along all the time with things like GPS sensors in the car, they're getting much more sensitive at some tracks. It's MotoGP this weekend. At some tracks, there are sensors over the far side of the curb that can detect a couple of millimetres of motorcycle tread as it goes on to what they call the green, because it tends to be painted green there at Assen for the TT this weekend. And it is a hot topic in all forms of motorsport, possibly except something like the Dakar Rally, where you have waypoints and you just plot your own direction between them. That's not what we're doing here. This is circuit racing. And there's absolutely no point in breaking a track record, as you'll know if you're online, if you're not actually following the circuit. It just doesn't seem like cricket to me. But then again, maybe I come from a different era. 36 and a half minutes to go. Ollie Platt on the top for Mayerschenk Racing. 31.6. What did we get down to yesterday, Jeremy? Remind me, at the top of the field.
31.056 was the fastest time by Olivier Plat. But second fastest was 31.6. And then from 31.6 down to the tail of the field in DPI was 32.5. So the whole rest of the field was covered by less than a second. But Olivier Plat was 6/10 faster than everybody else yesterday. He's really got to grips with this car now. They had a productive test here, the Mayerschenk team, a few weeks ago. Because the last few races, talked about it briefly yesterday, Ollie in particular has been struggling, just not happy with the balance of the car. Just hasn't been suiting his style, but a lot happier it seems this weekend.
Mustang sampling number 5 Cadillac out. Loic Duval behind the wheel of the, it's kind of dark grey, but from a distance it looks black.
Charcoal, what do you think?
Charcoal. I like charcoal, Jeremy. You said that yesterday about another car, and I thought that was very good. Little bit of gold pinstriping on there, looking very good. Headlights flashing, coming into the heel of the boot. That's turned number 8, tucks it into the right-hand side, and now heads up to the tricky turn 9. It's more than 90 degrees, turn 9, and it's one of those corners that can really throw you a curveball, in that you think, I've lost time there. I'll go through that a bit quicker. Nope, I can still go through that a bit. Oh, I've hit the wall. Because it does tighten up on you quite considerably. Out of the final corner, right in behind the WeatherTech Porsche and across the line then, with 35 to go for Loic Duval. Doesn't improve, but Kevin Magnussen did last time around, a 32.5 there. Half a second or thereabouts away from the top time. LMP2, PR1 Mathieson Motorsports. Mikkel Jensen is in 7th overall, ahead of Guy Smith, who's back. 2003 Le Mans winner for Bentley, behind the United Autosport Orica LMP207 steering wheel. In fact, he's just going to cross the line as well. LMP2, that is. LMP3 is United Autosports at the head of the field. That is the very similar looking car, 2 and 22 there, ahead of Andretti Motorsport by 0.2 of a second. And a new fastest time at the top of the field, Jeremy.
By Philip Albuquerque, 1:31.5. So that's almost fractionally quicker than, yes, actually 31.9 was that car's best time yesterday. That was Alexander Rossi in the Connacht Minolta car. So it's Acura 1-2 then at the moment, with Albuquerque taking over that top position from Olivier Pla, 0.4 quicker than Pla in that session. You just mentioned very briefly there the new LMP3 fastest time in the car number 2, the United Autosports Ligier. It was Nicholas Crutchen who set that time, and that's a great jump by that team. They were at the tail end of the pack yesterday of LMP3 cars, well, 6 out of 7 in LMP3, so a big jump forward for that car this morning. 1:41.6 that time turned by Nicholas Crutchen, which is a couple of tenths quicker than Oliver Askew, who was out very early in this session in the Andretti Autosport car number 36, and the best time yesterday by the number 2 car, actually Austin McCusko, turned 1:44.0, so a good bit quicker this morning for that number 2 car. And certainly great to see, actually, as I say, that Scott Andrews goes to the top of the pile in LMP2 for Riley Motorsports, number 74 car, at 1:41.682, so just 16 thousandths quicker by Scott Andrews. But it's great to see United Autosports bringing their LMP3 program. They had a lot of success in Europe in the Michelin Le Mans Series and Michelin Le Mans Cup and the European Le Mans Series. They've been trying for several years to bring that program over here as well to the United States. And finally this weekend, the United Autosports USA, they've got a base in Florida, making its debut in the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship. It's going to be very easy for us, as you did yesterday, to confuse the LMP2 and the LMP3 cars, because they're running in very similar liveries. But it's super to see that addition to the championship.
Andy Blackmore, once again, the fabulous spotter's guide. Look it up on your browser and check the minor details between some of the team cars to be able to identify. It doesn't help that the United cars in different categories are 2 and 22. And there was just something that pinged into my mind yesterday when I saw the car spinning. And I saw the 2 and immediately thought it was the 2. And of course it wasn't. I picked the wrong one. So if there's 2 to pick from, you know, I'll probably go for the wrong one. Never let me go red or black on the roulette wheel. That spin a little earlier for the win prototype was at the exit of turn 1, just over the curb a wee bit, and put that car across the track. Don't think there was anything too much. I did, however, see the left hand wing end plate wobbling a little bit. Yeah, no, it's broken another rear wing And I think they might be running out of rear bodywork sections there, Jeremy, because that car at the moment is being pushed back up the pit lane. Can't drive back up the pit lane, but it is being pushed back up the pit lane. And quite clearly, the rear wing is deranged there. The centre strut and the left end of the wing plane itself is broken away. And, of course, you always bring extra bodywork to the track, but they've gone through two tail ends in this session.
Yeah, not a good start to the weekend for that number 11 team, that's for sure. And it's a long push back up the hill there. When you say back up the pit lane, it is up back up the pit lane. There's definitely a down slope all the way down the pit lane here at Watkins Glen International. So it's a good workout for the crew there. That's certainly the least difficult way to get the car back to the garage area.
That's Jeremy Shaw. I'm John Hindhoff. This is IMSA Radio. Jeremy and I in the Haggerty Global Broadcast Centre, where we are watching the last half an hour of FP2 for the WeatherTech Sports Car Championship. Chair Adam, our VP Racing Fuel Pit Paddock reporter. A lot of curb being taken by the silver number 28 AMG. That's the Allegra Motorsports. Billy Johnson in with Michael DiCasada and Daniel Morad this weekend. A lot of curb through the inner loop, the bus stop area of that car. Silver roof and plenty of colours down the side of the InSync sponsored machine going through the heel of the boot at the moment. The GT cars, Jeremy, generally speaking, can take a wee bit more of the centre curb, the third of the fourth curbs and the exit curbs, although we saw yesterday actually one or two of the prototypes doing that as well. They aren't like garden curbs, they're not the side of the sidewalk type curbs, they are quite flat, although they are serrated on there, and you do hear the rumble through the tyres, and the driver will certainly feel that through his backside in a seat that's probably only an inch and a half or two away from those curbs themselves.
Yeah, it can be certainly fairly uncomfortable as you go sort of chattering over that ribbed curbing there. Number 28 car onto the pit lane. It's the Allegra Motorsports Mercedes. They had a difficult time last time out at Detroit, so certainly hoping for a cleaner run here this weekend. Michael DiCasada just clambering out of that car, which is now third fastest in GTD. It's still the number 14 Lexus that leads the way this morning. The time set very old by Carl Kirk with a 1:45.1. That's a very, very quick time indeed. In fact, if I look at the lap record, was set actually back in 2018 in qualifying by Jack Hawksworth. It's certainly a track that's suited Lexus over the years. A 1:44.4. Nine was the lap record in qualifying. The pole time 2 years ago, last time we were here at Watkins Glen, a 44.9 by Trent Hinman in the Acura. But 45.1 was a very, very good time this morning by Carl Kirk. The second fastest in GTD is the Wright Motorsports Porsche. It was Trent Hinman who set that time, and then Michael DiCasada third in the Mercedes for Allegra Motorsports. That time was actually set by Daniel Morad a little earlier in this practice session.
A new fastest lap.
Yes. Scott Andrews.
Sorry, I saw that flash up on my screen, and then just as I looked over to it, it disappeared. Shit. Give us the details.
Scott Andrews going purple the last time around, a 1:40.875 for the LMP3 category. So that car clearly with a lot of speed and a bit of fun and frivolity going on in the LMP3 category, because Scott Andrews and Gar Robinson share that 74 machine. They are leading the Michelin Endurance Cup ahead of a driver that was with them at the 24 Hours of Daytona, which, by the way, they won. Ask them what time it is and they'll tell you on their shiny new Rolexes. With Oliver Askew, who was fastest yesterday, but Oliver is driving for the 36 Andretti Autosport LMP3 machine. So the former teammates, who have been very successful so far this year, now fighting against each other to try and win another championship honor.
Just looking through some of the times. I know it is a bit longer circuit than we've seen up until recently. But a big gap, half a second between Albuquerque and Cameron. The two Acura DPIs at the top of the times at the moment. Then a very small gap back to Kamui Kobayashi for the Ally Cadillac DPI. Just 0.092 of a second, so just under a 1/100th of a second. Literally the blink of an eye then. Then Ollie Jarvis is another 0.3 further back for Mazda Motorsports in the Multimatic chassis car. So beginning to tighten up. I expect, Jeremy, that at some stage we will see a qualifying simulation in this session.
Qualifying certainly for this race isn't as important as it was last time out in Detroit, for example, where it's just a 100-minute race. This time, of course, we've got a six-hour race, so you've got plenty of time to sort things out. It's qualifying, like I say, won't be. Track positions is important everywhere, but you can overtake around here, and there's all sorts of strategies that will be played out during the race. So it isn't something that they will concentrate on nearly as much as they would have done a couple of weeks ago in Detroit, I think. Ultimate speed isn't what you need for a six-hour race. It's being fast consistently. That is the key to success on Sunday.
XM 202 on Sunday for the whole of the 6 hours of the Glen, as well as IMSA Radio RS2 via imsaradio.com. Into the pits for the number 55, Ollie Jarvis, driven Mazda Motorsports DPI. And into the final half season of Mazda's run in IMSA's top category. We'll be sad to see them go. The chassis manufacturer's Multimatic will continue with at least two and possibly three Volkswagen AG brands in Porsche and Audi, who have already declared, we're led to believe that they will have different motive power units in the new DPI hybrid era. And yet to find out what other manufacturers might link themselves to Multimatic. Kamui Kobayashi to the top, 131.377, Jeremy. This is starting to get a bit serious now with 23 minutes to go.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? The times are beginning to come down a little bit, 31.3. Still not quite as quick as we went yesterday, and still somewhere away from that. The times we expect to see will be in the low 30s or high 29s. So we're not even yet down to a 31 flat. So certainly more time to come. But we're seeing some quicker times now. Kamui Kobayashi, one of quite a few drivers who hasn't raced previously here at Watkins Glen, either in the WeatherTech Sports Car Championship or anything else. But as ever, with somebody of his level of experience and competence, it didn't take him long to get to grips with this track. That team did not test here previously, so the first time he'd seen the track was when he arrived here for the walk. Track walk on, what was that? That would be Thursday, wouldn't it?
He is what is termed here in the United States as a quick study. He learns very quickly indeed. Brings the Ally purple, two-tone purple and white car into the pit lane.
And that's Pagenaud getting in.
Simon Pagenaud with a distinctive bright red and white pinstriped helmet getting into that Cadillac, getting in a different set of Michelin slick tyres before he rolls out. Fairly leisurely driver change over there. Plenty of time to do that as we're in a practice session. I mentioned Michelin tyres there, Shea. A longer race here, so that's had an effect on the Michelin tyre allocations for this weekend.
Yes, 14 sets for the DPIs to go out and play with, so there is no concern about trying to save some extra rubber for the six-hour race, although it should still be about a 7 or 8 pit stop race, so they will need at least that many sets of tires. But for the two practice sessions and then the one qualifying, they should be okay with their Michelins. It's 14 sets as well for the LMP2 and GTLM classes this weekend. So LMP2 getting to run the same number of sets as the pro categories. In the LMP3 and GTD, it's 9 sets of tires only, and I say only sort of tongue-in-cheek because that's still a lot of sets of tires for the course of the weekend. But the minimum drive times are the other interesting thing that correspond with the classes. 30 minutes only, so not even a complete fuel run for the DPI and GTLM contenders, an hour and a half for LMP2, LMP3, and GTD. And then for next week, John, we've got the race next Friday night. Remember, tune in. It's not even a week between WeatherTech races. I did notice on the tire allocation, it's 10 sets for GTLM. So a lot of tires for the GTLM competitors. They can use both of these races this weekend, basically as an additional test session if they'd like.
Yeah, very good. That is a race that runs till, I think I'm right in saying, I was trying not to look too far ahead because it scrambles my poor little brain. I think that runs till 9 o'clock in the evening here at the Watkins Glen International Circuit next week. So early hours of Saturday morning for those of you in Europe, but well reminded by Shea that we do have track action on Thursday and Friday of next week, so a very quick turnaround and an opportunity for a bit of extra IMSA racing, effectively that event taking the place of our trip north of the border to Canadian Tire Motorsport Park, and that would have been next weekend. So the team staying here instead for the Tioga Downs 240. That's 2 hours and 40, not 240 minutes, which confused the you-know-what out of me. And that is next Friday night, and we'll have the qualifying sessions as well. Also, a couple of other races in that as well. Check IMSA.com for all of the details. Inside, Jeremy, the last 20 minutes, and still some fast times coming in. Ligier of Felipe Fraga and Riley Motorsports goes to the top and improves in LMP3.
Yeah, stays at the top because it had been Scott Andrews who set the fastest time in that car already. So Felipe Fraga, the Brazilian who doesn't have a lot of LMP3 experience. I think the race at Mid-Ohio was his first time in an LMP3 car. Again, a quick study here, and he has improved upon that time that was set by Scott Andrews a while ago. He's the first car to dip below 1 minute 40, 1 minute 39.937 then for Felipe Fraga. Of course, this is the first time we've seen LMP3 cars as part of the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship, but we have had LMP3 cars here in the past taking part in the IMSA Prototype Challenge, and the lap record that was set then in the previous generation, the earlier generation of LMP3 cars, was in qualifying. Colin Thompson turned a 142.142. That's an average speed of 119 miles an hour. That was back in 2017. That was probably the first year of the LMP3 cars in the IPC. So good bit, 142.1. And the fastest time so far now is a 141.1, so a full second quicker relatively early in the weekend for Felipe Fraga. Fastest then in LMP3. The fastest time also in GTLM, the Corvette to the top. Tommy Milner turns at 142.3. Again, the lap record for GTLM qualifying with Antonio Garcia in the C7R Corvette. This is the first time, of course, the C8R has been here to Watkins Glen International. 140.799. The qualifying lap record for GTLM. Fastest time so far, Tommy Milner, 142.3. That eclipsed the 142.6 that was set earlier by Matty Campbell in the number 79 WeatherTech Porsche.
It's Jeremy Shaw and it's John Hindhoff as well in the Hagerty Global Broadcast Centre. Just under 16 minutes to go.
4 seconds until the GTD, LMP3 and LMP2 cars are parked, and then we're going to see some really quick lap times from the pro cars.
Yeah, is this the opportunity, Shea, do you think, for the pro cars to do their the qualifying sim, or will they leave that till just before qualifying in FP3?
There is no FP3. Qualifying comes up next for the WeatherTech competitors.
Of course it does,
and
yes.
I am seeing P next to the 31 Whelen Engineering Cadillac, the 55 Mazda, the 01 Chip Ganassi Racing Cadillac, and the 5 Mustang Sampling Cadillac with an O for Ricky Taylor. So, yes, those competitors at the very least are waiting until the track is clear, and then they're going to lay down some hurt and try and get up to that time of Moi Kobayashi.
So waiting for the checkered flag.
Now it's out.
And it is
in effect.
Yes. It isn't anything other than a call from IMSA to the teams that need to leave the battleground, and then the pro classes get the place to themselves for the final 15 minutes of the session, which is starting right now. Did notice, by the way, on the way into the pit lane that the 01, and we said, who did we put in the 01? It's Renger in it now, but so it must have been Renger who brought it in then. Unless it was Kevin, just brought a little bit too much speed into the right-hander in the pit lane and dropped into the pit lane filter lane perfectly well, but then went wide and dropped two wheels back outside of it. I think in a race that might get you a talking to. Whether it would get you a penalty on its first offence, I'm not sure, but the idea is that you stay inside that white line through corner number 11, stick to the right of the white line and drop into the pit lane. And the 01 Cadillac didn't do that. Started inside, came outside, went back inside again. So let's see what sort of times we begin to see as the teams begin to come into the pit lane. Jeremy, what are you taking from this so far? Quite a lot of good quality data being gathered.
Yeah, good preparation certainly for the race. Of course, you know, this is a very different time of day to when we'll be racing on Sunday. We'll see the green flag at 10:40 local time, whereas now it's only 9 o'clock even now. Not an awful lot to be gained, I think, from this session. But, you know, they'll be just making sure on the consistency of the cars, making sure everything is working well. They can get through traffic as cleanly as they want, and particularly get used to the fact that track limits are being watched, so to speak. You know, make sure the drivers stay within the confines of what the track designs originally planned 50-odd years ago. So, I'm surprised we aren't seeing some faster times in some of the sessions. Perhaps I would have expected to see a little bit quicker. Particularly, conditions now pretty good. It's relatively cool this morning. So I think it's about 70 degrees, I think Shane was saying a while ago. So pretty good track conditions right now. There's no sun's not beating down. So I would have expected to see some slightly faster times, perhaps, but it has been, apart from that incident early on that brought out the red flag right on the first lap, it's been pretty clean. So that's certainly something that all of the teams will have taken the benefit from. Mazda out on the track right now is fifth fastest. That's the car that not only qualified on the pole position here a couple of years ago, which the last time we were here, of course, with the pandemic last season, we weren't able to come to Watkins Glen, and everybody missed that. But the Mazda also went on to win the race and set the fastest lap as well. So it was very, very definitely the first win for this program as well, wasn't it? Overall win for the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship, the DPI car, and certainly coming here with very, very high expectations, the Mazda team this weekend. Yesterday there was a turbo boost problem towards the end of the practice session. Today, I believe the car has been running pretty straightforwardly complete, but he'd only completed 18 laps in this session. Oliver Jarvis is shown at the wheel of the number 55 car at the moment, currently fifth on the charts with the best time of 132.3. So just about a second off the fastest time we've seen this morning.
Yeah, interesting. Interesting. It was the summer of Mazda, that, wasn't it? They had a fantastic run in the middle of the year. Talked to Ollie, not Friday just gone, but the Friday before, as part of the 30th anniversary celebrations in the UK for Mazda winning the 24 Hours of Le Mans outright back in 1991. It's the actual anniversary on Wednesday, actually, to the day.
Strange we haven't seen more of that.
Yeah. I think them stepping away from the top flight of motorsport is probably the reason that hasn't been commemorated as much globally. Mazda UK made a big fuss about it, had some heritage cars, had the very limited edition, only 24 ever built, MX-5 from their heritage fleet there in the renowned colours of the 55 car that took the chequered flag back in 1991. Of the many limited edition MX-5 on Miatas that have come out, that is possibly the most limited edition. And it was painted as well. It wasn't just stickered up. It was actual paint. Go and look it up, Shea. It's right up your alley. As well as an RX-3, rotary-engined RX-3 road car, which sounded phenomenal.
Yeah,
oh, just great. So there was about 20... automotive and motorsport journalists invited a week past Friday down to a recreation of a field in France. It was meant to have been at the Classic at Le Mans, but of course that's not happening at Le Mans this year. So a bit of Le Mans created down by Tunbridge Wells, where Jota Sport are. And we had some gourmet food trucks, including a lovely old Citroën corrugated sided van, pushing out sweet and savoury crepes and such like. And then we had a special edit of the 1991 Le Mans race with the Radio Le Mans commentary grafted onto it. And Ollie was there. Harry Tinkler should have been there as well, but I think, as I said yesterday, he was drafted to go and be on standby as a spare driver down at Puebla for Formula E. Ollie was six, I think, in 1991, but he did bring his winning trophy in LMP2 from 2017 with him, when they very nearly won as an LMP2 car. I wonder if that's on the cards again for this year in August. Good day. Well done to Owen Mildenhall and Monique and the rest of the Mazda UK PR team under Graham, and also to everybody, Sam and Kelly at Jota for bringing out the heritage fleet that they look after. Thoroughly enjoyed that.
That would have been cool, John, I must admit.
It was good, mate.
And yeah. Of course, Harry Tinkler wasn't even born when race happened. He didn't come on the scene until 3 months later, 4 months later.
Yeah, we had a good old chat about what makes Le Mans Le Mans, and also about the state of the IMSA series. And we were allowed to record that. So we will be playing that in the break before we have, here on IMSA Radio, before we go to the countdown to green for the Michelin Pilot Challenge. So that's a little bit later on today. So leave RS2 on your browser and we'll get that in for you there. So there's been a couple of people who missed it when we played it after Midweek Motorsport on Wednesday. But it'll be here on IMSA Radio in that gap between the track action before the Michelin Pilot Challenge today. And we'll have it for download for you early next week once we've got all the race coverage up over the weekend. Pushing down towards the last 5 minutes, still at 131.3 from the Ally Cadillac, which is the best time. Simon Pagenaud's just brought that car into the pits. Got about a tenth of a second from Dane Cameron, then Ricky Taylor. It's popped up into third, or at least the number 10 car in third for Konica Minolta Acura. Just 0.02 of a second behind second and 53 away from third. Oh, hang on, who's just got the top? It's Ricky Taylor. Ricky Taylor to the top with a 130.6, Jeremy. That's more like it.
That's more like it. Absolutely right. Ricky Taylor there, as you say, number 10 car, the championship leader in leading everything, aren't they, at the moment, that number 10 car, leading the overall championship and also in the Michelin Le Mans Cup, Michelin Endurance Cup also. A note on the Mazda, by the way, we were just talking about the number 55 car, and they have had a problem this morning. Similar failure to last night, so the turbo boost was down. That'll be concerning for the Mazda team. So the pre-disasterized, apparently not. Not exactly a disaster at this stage. It's nothing terminal. The car is, I think, out on track at the moment. I think Oliver Jarvis is on you just improved, actually, 131.7 last time around in the number 55 car, but still having some niggly problems with that number 55 Mazda.
Ship.
Antonio Garcia has made an appearance this morning. He was asking on social media for a running partner yesterday, couldn't find anyone to go running with him. Well, he can't find anyone on track to run with him, and that's because he's too quick. He's bettering his lap time right now, but he did just improve to a 142.102. That is faster by half a second than the fastest lap we saw yesterday. And the Spaniard looking to put even more time between himself and the rest of the field. Second is a BMW of John Edwards, and then third is the other Corvette. Let's see what Antonio can do as he brings it across the line.
Yeah, they were looking forward to being here in the C8R. It's the first time that's been here, Jeremy. I thought it was, because, of course, we weren't here last year.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And Antonio Garcia, remarkably now, is the, Antonio, but the least young of the GTLM drivers these days. It's quite remarkable. I still think of him as being one of the younger drivers in the Corvette camp, but he's been there a long time now, and he is the most experienced driver in this category in every sense of the word, in actual fact, because Antonio Garcia is now the only driver who's taken part in every single GTLM race since the inception of the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship in 2014. He was at the end of last year. He was not alone. Oliver Gavin and John Edwards had been omnipresent in all of the races. There had been 75 up until that point. Of course, Oliver Gavin retiring now and just did the Rolex race at the beginning of the year at Daytona. John Edwards missed. It was a non-championship race, so I'm going to say he's still continuing his streak, because Detroit wasn't a championship round. But, of course, John Edwards didn't take part. The GTLM wasn't at Mid-Ohio. So
correct.
So his streak is still alive. And talking of streaks, the other streak that was ended recently was Andy Lally's streak of competing in all of the GTD races. But again, last week in Detroit was only a round of the IMSA WeatherTech, the WeatherTech Sprint Cup for GTD. It wasn't an overall championship round. So again, his streak. Andy Lally remains the most experienced driver in IMSA WeatherTech competition with 80 starts to his name, and he'll be hoping to get back in a win column. It's been a long, long time for Andy Lally. His last win actually was right here at Watkins Glen in 2017, when he won the 6 hours along with Catherine Legg.
Yeah, Catherine back this weekend, of course, in the Hardpoint EBM Porsche. At IMSA Radio, we've got about 90 seconds left for this session before the checkered flag comes out. Andy Lally, last one. How long ago, Shea Adam?
1,455 days ago, which seems impossible when you consider a person of Andy Lally's stature.
She is the only person I know who keeps those kind. Well, her and David Croft love these streaks. They keep running notes and how many days, hours, minutes and picoseconds it has been since something happened to someone, somewhere. Someone has just been off at turn number 9, and I think it was the Whelan Engineering Cadillac, actually, because it was right in front of the 55 Mazda that runs right out of the wall for Ollie Jarvis, coming through turn 11 onto the start finish line. Big puff of dust in front of the Englishman. And I'm pretty certain that was Pipo Durrani who was exploring the outer edges of turn nine. He's the car in front of the 55 going up through the climbing S's at the moment. Not a scintilla of a lift up there as time. Yeah, it was the Whelen Cadillac. Thought I saw a flash of red. And in behind them is Renger van der Zander as well. So Pipo Durrani not improving. 130.451, the best time at the moment. Dan Cameron has brought the Acura into the pits for MSR. So stretch the lead now to 0.2 of a second, and then half a second further back from Ricky Taylor is Renger van der Zander as the checkered flag goes out. Acura, Acura, Cadillac, Cadillac, Mazda, Cadillac, Cadillac, Jeremy, as it stands at the moment. And some improvements by some of those on that last lap.
Yes, indeed. Dane Cameron came in to the pits, as you said, right before the checkered flag, but his previous lap had been his fastest. I'm hearing a couple of people telling me from the pit lane that the tyres are not coming in quite as quickly as some people had anticipated. Perhaps because of the fact that it is a little bit cooler this morning than it would normally be expected this time of year, or you know, because it's early this morning, it's not quite as cool as it will be later in the afternoon here. So it's somewhat unusual conditions for the sailing six hours of the Glen, and tyres take a little bit longer to come in. So lap times this morning not quite as quick, I think, as certainly I had anticipated in the DPI ranks. But there are some improvements. There's an improvement for Durrani on the final lap. Oliver Jarvis goes quicker on the final lap at 131.2, but still remains fifth quickest in the number 55 Mazda.
That said, Jeremy, we're only just over a second and a quarter for those seven cars. It's a 3.5 mile circuit, give or take, 11 corners. I suspect, and you know, half of that is half a second, isn't it? Half of the field is within half a second. I think we're going to have a decent baton for qualifying, don't you?
Oh, yes, I do. Absolutely right. I think it is going to be fun. And all of the cars... Well, no, Tristan Vergier didn't get within a second of the fastest time this morning. And number five, Mustang Sampling, JDC Miller Motorsports Cadillac, but everybody else within striking range, I think, of what should be a pretty interesting qualifying session later on this afternoon.
And share a new fastest lap in GTLM right at the end.
Right in the dying moments, came into the pit lane his next lap by Bruno Spengler, the iRacing champion for IMSA in 2020, who is a rookie to the Salem 6 Hours of the Glen, but he knows the track well from racing it on the virtual world. He set the fastest time, a 141.977, which, again, not necessarily record-breaking, but much quicker than we saw yesterday.
That's Shea Adam, our VP Racing Fuel Pit and Paddock reporter. Jeremy Shaw was with me, John Hindhoff, in the Haggerty Global Broadcast Centre. Stay tuned to IMSA Radio RS2 via imsaradio.com for the whole of the Salem 6 Hours of the Glen weekend from Watkins Glen International, live and exclusive here on IMSA Radio.
This program is a Radio Show Limited production. For more, check imsaradio.com and subscribe to IMSA Radio wherever you get your podcasts.